So, in Bhagavatam we've seen there's these different relationships or rasas, the Sakya rasa, and the Vatsalya rasa, and the Madhurya rasa, and also Dasya rasa. Explicit Dasya rasa examples are not so prominent in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam in the Raja Leela. Of course, that's very prominent in the Dwarka Leela and the Mathura Leela. There's more of that mood. Krishna's grown up and he takes the position of king and leader of the Yadus, etc. So then he gets that respect, you know, as and everyone else is his servant and he's the master. Whereas in Raja, he's just a small boy. Nevertheless, there is examples given, quoted in Nectar Devotion, and probably Ujjwala Nilamani also, of Dasya Rasa existing also with Krishna in Raja. Though I would think probably it's a little mixed in any case with Sakya or something like that. So anyway, I won't present any outstanding examples in Raja Leela of that. So all we have left is the, just to take different examples, because we're trying to discuss the relationships with Krishna and how he responds to his different devotees. So for those who treat him as an equal, then he becomes their friend, best friend. And for those who treat him as their son, then they take up the roles of mothers and fathers, either literally or secondarily, as in Raja with all the other gopas and gopis. And then we have the relationship of the young gopis with Krishna. This is the Ujjwala Rasa or the Madhurya Rasa, which is a little difficult to discuss, I suppose, because generally we don't get into too much detail about this. Nevertheless, it is in the Bhagavatam itself, and in fact, the center of the Bhagavatam is considered to be the five chapters discussing the Rasa Leela, which concerns Krishna and the gopis. And that is considered to be actually the ultimate stage of surrender to Krishna. So I won't go into too many details about that. Just as Krishna began to play his flute. Of course, it is described previous to that, there are indications how Krishna would return home from herding the cows with the cowherd boys. And when he returned home, there's a few verses describing how the young gopis would be glancing at him very shyly, and Krishna would smile back and glance at them. But not so much detail. And then we get the leela of stealing the young unmarried gopis' clothing. The very young gopis' clothing. So those leelas are there. And then, finally, we get this explicit expression of love in the performance of the Rasa Leela, which has different parts. Anyway, these five chapters are considered to be like the core of the Bhagavatam, and all the commentators, they have a lot of commentary on these five chapters, because they have several layers of meaning, etc. So anyway, Krishna began to play his flute, and that's a certain age. I mean, he's only 8 years old. He began to play his flute. This is about 1 year after the Govardhan Leela. 1 year went by, and then he took up his flute and began playing it. And then, this is an evening time. And then all of the, and of course, previously this is the whole glorification of the flute by the gopis. How that flute, you know, bewilders them. So he began playing his flute, and then all the gopis ran off to see Krishna, regardless of what they're doing. Some were feeding their husbands, some were taking care of their children, feeding them or giving them milk, and some were cooking, etc. The married gopis. And they ran off and left their husbands. Some didn't escape. They were locked up. So they were considered less fortunate. And Vishnu Chakravarti says those were the ones that actually were not on the highest level of purity yet. They were still in the process of, we can say, sadhana or late stages of bhava or whatever. So they hadn't been completely up to that mark. But by the intensity of their separation from Krishna, being forcibly separated by their husbands then, that burned up the last impurities. And then they were able to go to see Krishna either that night or next night or next night or whenever. So eventually they all got to see Krishna. In some verses it indicates that as if they gave up their lives. There's one verse that says that, but actually Vishnu Jagavari says how they could give up lives there, because they're all eternal anyway. And it would be very inauspicious for the Ras Lila to have someone die on the night of the Ras Lila. So actually, they didn't. Nobody died, actually. So they made him. He explains that many, actually, this went on for every night, actually, not just one night. For the whole next year, every night, the Ras Lila went on. And even though it says Sarat season, all the seasons, no matter what season it was, they all mixed together, and the best of each season was prominent, including the autumn season. So that even though it may be spring, it had all the mixture of all the others, and even if it was summer, which is a very hot season, still, all the other seasons mixed together on the Ras Lila night. So, in this way, the Sarat season is considered particularly wonderful because it is cool, a little cooler than the hot season, and it's festive season also for things, crops growing, and the moon became very big, and on the Purnima it became very, very huge, and it could light up, lit up the forest, everything like that. So it was a very suitable situation. So Krishna began playing his flute, and those that could, they joined him, and it's described how they didn't think. So that some of them were maybe putting on their makeup and they just dropped everything and ran to Krishna with maybe half the mascara on one eye or something like that, or one bangle on their hand, or one anklet on their foot, or they put the anklets on their wrists, did everything backward, or their earrings, one earring was on, one earring was off. So in this way they were all, they went out in this haphazard state because of their extreme joy to meet Krishna. When they heard that flute, then they know Krishna is calling, so we must go. So the eagerness, they ran off without considering anything else. So the main element, of course, there is they ran off not considering their families, not considering their husbands, not considering Dharma. And they're willing to give all of that up because of the indication of Krishna when he called with his flute. So this is the big sacrifice they made. Because in India, of course, for the wife to run away from the husband is the end. You're rejected from society. You don't have any maintenance anymore, nothing. So they didn't consider that. They only considered Krishna as called, so therefore we will go. And so they all ran off, those that could, those that were locked up. They struggled, and some jumped out of the windows and came. Some couldn't even do that. And then they meditated on Krishna, became purified, and then somehow they were able to join. So in this way, Krishna met them all. And then they were very eager to meet Krishna. And it's described that there were approximately 300 kotis, which is about 30 billion gopis that came there for the Ras Lila. So they all assembled there, and Krishna was able to talk to them all, and they could all hear him, even though it was a huge crowd. Somehow he by his mystic potency he could talk to them all. But it was very shocking, because when he did speak, he said, "Go home." And they were after they were they called, he had called them there, and you know, they were eager to meet him. Then he said, "You better go home, because you know it's not very good. You do this, you'll be criticized by the society and your husband and this and that, and all get criticized also. So you all better go home." So this put them in the most extraordinary disappointment, you know, like this. So that's actually the first chapter of the Ras Lila section, where he kind of discourages them with his words, and then they become very, very upset by this. But finally, of course, then he does agree, okay, yeah, they have arguments back and forth like this. And then finally he agrees, okay, you stay here with me, and they have some pastimes. And then he disappears. And this makes them even more upset. So after that, there's a whole description of the different types of ecstasy they go through, different very exalted stages of ecstasy and separation, where suddenly they even begin to think that they are Krishna. I am Krishna, and they begin to act out as pastimes. So this is a very high level of ecstasy. And one will take the role of Mother Yasoda, someone else will take the role of Krishna, and they will act out that lila, or they will act out some other, Putana, and whatever like that, and Krishna, etc. And actually, Yoga Maya, as I said, took the role of the demons, because the gopis couldn't take those roles, because that's unfavorable. So they took the role of Krishna and all the gopis, and then Yoga Maya took the role of the demons. Yeah? And they would enact all these different things because they were so absorbed in Krishna Lila. So this is a very high state of ecstasy where they actually identify with Krishna and begin to act like Krishna. So then the intensity of that emotion kept rising and rising, and finally they decided, we will go and look for Krishna. So they would go. They went in the forest, and they were trying to trace his footsteps in the forest, and it got darker and darker and darker. And they were getting in great anxiety about this, and then they saw not only one set of footprints, but two. And they said, oh, one of the gopis was with Krishna. So some were favorable and some were unfavorable, and then some were criticizing, that's the Chandravali section. And some were saying, oh, this gopi is very fortunate. That was the, you know, Kalalita Vishaka group. So there were different groups commenting about, you know, what this all means. So those who were on Radha's side were, you know, praising the great fortune, and those on the other side were criticizing how devious she is, that she has left us here and she's gone off with Krishna and not told us like this. So it's like indirectly, not really direct, but indirectly they're all making these comments. And they interpret as they see the footprints here, and here Krishna was holding her hand, and here Radharani got tired, so she had to sit down on a, you know, a trunk of a tree like this, they could see the footprints. And here he raised her up in the air so she could pick some flowers or some fruit like this. And then they saw finally that Krishna disappeared, and there was only one set of footprints there of that one gopi, and then Krishna's gone. And then they came, and that finally they saw that there was that gopi there lying on the ground who was, she became unconscious. So Krishna also left that gopi, who we say is Radha. And she had fainted. And all the gopis, when they saw that, they all became very compassionate. Even the opposite group, the Chandravali, everyone, they all became so compassionate for her. And they revived her and asked her what had happened, etc. So, then she explained everything, and I became a little proud, and and then Krishna left like that. So they were all sympathetic with her. And so they began, you know, looking here and there again in the forest, and went deeper and deeper and deeper. Then they thought, okay, we better give up. It's so dense that the moonlight won't come through, and it's getting very dark, and there may be wild animals, so we don't know what to do now. And when they're in that quandary, then finally they saw Krishna. So then they were very overjoyed, and Krishna had again pastimes with them and whatever, many amusements. But they were still very, very reserved. They had this little anger in them. Why Krishna had to leave us like this? So then they asked some questions. This is another famous part where they asked a riddle. That because they were trying to figure out just what is Krishna's idea here? What is he trying to do to us? Does he like us or does he not like us? Is he trying to make us, put us in pain? Or has he got some other purpose behind all of this? So, therefore, they didn't want to ask directly, so they asked it as a little bit of a joke, and to see how cleverly Krishna could answer all of this. So the riddles here actually, I didn't actually print the riddle there, but anyway, the essence is that who are you? They analyze three types of people. The one person who, gets served by others, and he responds. If they don't serve, he doesn't respond. In other words, it's a little fruit of, you know, somebody does something for me, I will do for you. If you don't do for me, I don't do for you. So that's one type of person. Second type of person is, whether the person gives you anything or not, still that person responds and, does for the other person. That's like selfless love. And the third person, no matter what happens, whether persons do or don't do anything for the person, they ignore them completely. Or they actually commit violence against the person. So then they ask, so who are these people and who are you? Which one are you? So then Krishna replied, well, the first one is obviously a materialist who will do things only because he gets some result from somebody else. So that's condemned. That's a low person, He only does for himself, actually, and he will do for other people if they will give something to him, and he gets profit from it. So this is a gross materialist. And the second type, he says, there are two types of people. One is like mother and father for the children. So they will do for them without any expectation of return, because they have this selfless love. The other is the devotee, who acts for all the people of the world, because he is, you know, he hasn't got any personal desires, and he wants to preach on behalf of Krishna. So there's two types of people there. And then he says the third type, this is the, he says, is the guru drohi, one who commits violence against the guru or the elder. So he says, the third type of person divides up into four types. One is that who ignores everybody. The first one is called the Atmaram, right? As a very advanced person who's indifferent to the material world, so whatever you do, he doesn't associate with. He's very detached from everything because he's enjoying the self. Like again, so no matter what happens, he doesn't respond. So there's no real fault in him in one sense because he's spiritually advanced. The other is called Aptakama. He's not on that stage. He has desires, but he has all desires fulfilled. Some, like a rich materialist, has all desires fulfilled, so somebody does something, he doesn't care anymore because he's satisfied with what he's got. Then the other type, third one, is the person who acts disrespectfully to persons who have, and he has no cause for disrespect for them. For instance, if the mother and father are there and you disrespect them, and they're doing everything for you, but you ignore everything completely. So that's called avagya, disregard for the person. And then the last one is the person who actually does violence against the person without justice. And they act against the person, they do some wrong to them, and they harm them and disturb them. So in this way, he gave all of these different types of people. And so they said, so which one are you? You're not the first type. You're also not the second type, because you're neither a parent to us, you're not our mother and father, nor are you a devotee. So you must be the third type, the one who just ignores everybody. So which one are you? So he says, actually, I'm none of these. But I do not respond to my devotee. And they were a little puzzled by that. So then he goes into a big explanation of that. That's all written here. It's a very beautiful explanation. So he explains why I do not respond. But they were wondering why Krishna disappeared and we were crying and he didn't do anything. So in response, he says, I do not respond to my devotee, even though I say, you know, according to his, you surrender to me, I respond. But then sometimes he doesn't do that. So therefore he explains, he says, for the devotee, the sadhaka in the material world, sometimes I do not appear before him in order to make his desire stronger. And we see examples like when Narada Muni, the Lord spoke and he saw the Lord and then he said, well, I'll not appear to you in this lifetime again in order to increase your desire for me. So the Lord may do this to the devotee, but that doesn't mean the Lord isn't there. We cannot see him. He is there and he is listening. So Krishna said also to the Gopis, I was listening to you also. You didn't see me, but I saw you. So he wasn't, he's not, it's not that he's detached. But for a certain purpose, he may not appear before the devotee. And the other type of person is the siddha devotee, one who is already perfected, not sadhana. He will also do this in order to increase their desire for him, to make their love stronger. So then the gopis said, well, which one are we? You're treating us like sadhana siddhas or what, like regular devotees or what? And Krishna then said, yes, to some degree I'm doing that. And I'm very sorry for that I actually left you. But there is a purpose behind this. I was trying to see if I could make your love increase. However, I have found that your love is so strong that there's no question of increase or decrease ever. It is so strong all the time that I cannot test it. That love is so strong, it does not increase or decrease by one little atom, one little fraction at all. So this I am showing to the people of this world, that your love is the greatest of all. So that is why I have disappeared from you, because it's only in this separation that the intensity of this love will show. And later on, he sends Uddhava back to see this intensity of separation love. And the purpose of that is to show Uddhava that these are the highest persons. And then Uddhava comes back to Mathura, and then he announces to all the Yadavas that the gopis are the highest of all. And he makes it public that they are the highest devotees. So therefore, in order to glorify the gopis, you, the gopis, I've done this. So So then the gopis felt very ashamed. We were trying to defeat Krishna and accuse him of, you know, giving us pain, but actually he is trying to glorify us. And so we are defeated by Krishna. We were trying to defeat him, but actually we have been defeated by him. But of course, again, Krishna was defeated by the gopis also, because he again appeared. And then he says, finally, I cannot repay the debt that you have incurred. In other words, you've given up your families, dharma, everything. I have not done that. You have done that. Huh? So we say, you know, as accordingly as you surrender unto me, I respond to you. Well, you did that, but I didn't do that. So I'm less than you. And I cannot do that. Yeah? I can't break dharma like you can break dharma. Yeah? So you're greater than I am. So in this way he glorified them. Actually, in that verse, there's the famous verse, you know, I cannot repay the debt to you. There's several interpretations of that verse also. That you gave up everything, or that I could not give up like you gave up. So there's different interpretations there. But anyway, the idea is that Krishna says, I cannot repay what you have done. And the sacrifice that you have done for me is greater than the sacrifice of anybody else. And you are the greatest of all. But I wanted to show this to the world, that your love would never waver in any case. So therefore, I've done this, and I disappeared like this. So then the gopis were completely satisfied. So after that, then Krishna held the actual Rasa Lila, when they had given up this anger, and everybody became favorable, everyone was happy. Krishna was happy, and the gopis were happy, etc. Then they began that Rasa Lila, in which there were, I think, 30 billion gopis. And then, that's also described very wonderfully, how Krishna was in between each gopi, but he was also in the center. And they had made a huge ring of, 30 billion gopis or whatever, and they said the ring. But somehow it fitted within the forest of Vrindavan by the inconceivable potency of Krishna. So all of those gopis made a big circle, but it somehow fitted within that little area. And Krishna was in the middle, but he would be in the middle, but very quickly he would come out and he would be between each gopi. So it'd be a gopi and a Krishna, a gopi and a Krishna, a gopi and a Krishna. And then he would run in the middle and be in the middle with one gopi, that is Radha. Like that. So he'd be going in and out like this all the time. And they had instruments, but actually the main music was the sound of their ankle bells and their bracelets. That was the main music. That became the music that determined the beat and the music, the accompaniment. And they would also sing. Different gopis would sing, like Lalita and Vishakha and Radha would sing along, and they'd sing tunes, and the gopis would be keeping rhythm with their anklets and everything. And they would also do mudras. They had different mudras. They have this described in detail in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu. There are all the different mudras that they do in dance. So to express the actions in the mood of the song, then they would use their hands like this, and then would come back and hold Krishna again, like this. But it is remarkable that if Krishna was between each gopi, then the gopi would look on this side and see a Krishna and see Krishna on that side also. But they didn't. They couldn't see two Krishnas there. They only saw one Krishna with me, with the one gopi. They couldn't see this two Krishnas, one on either side. that was arranged by Yoga Maya's potency. It's also described at the beginning of the Rasa Lila. It is not Krishna that determined the Rasa Lila. The Rasa Lila was his own personality, and it arranged everything. Not Krishna's will, it was the Rasa Lila that arranged everything there in the Rasa Lila, even beyond Krishna's control. So that was astonishing for him also. So that arrangement went on. So Krishna was in the middle, and it's also described that Krishna was Marakata. Marakata means emerald. But usually Krishna is described as sapphire, because he's dark blue, and emerald is green. So one explanation is that actually he is dark blue, but because the gopis are golden, the effulgence of their gold mixed with his color, and of course his emotions also, the gopis, their emotion mixing with Krishna's emotion, then he turned green, the combination of blue and yellow becomes green. So therefore he became shining like a emerald instead of a sapphire. So that's because of the love of the gopis and their golden complexion. Of course, their complexion and their, mood is the same. The gold is equal to their emotions. So, in this way, they held this Ras Lila to their satisfaction. And after that, then they went to the river and had water games, and they splashed water on each other, etc. They had a picnic and everything. They went to different bowers. And then finally, when the night was over, they dispersed. But the time is said to be a whole night of Brahma. 1,000 yuga cycles went by. Why? Because they wanted to extend the enjoyment. The bliss, they wanted to extend that bliss. So the bliss of a whole day of, a night of Brahma was there, which is 1,000 yuga cycles. Within that, 8 hours or 7 hours, whatever they were there. So just like all the gopis fit within Vrindavan, so all the one whole night of Brahma fit within a few hours also by the inconceivable potency of Krishna. So this display of rasa is considered to be the ultimate pastime of Krishna. In the nectar devotion there, it says, what is the difference between Vishnu and Krishna? Tattva. By tattva or siddhanta, they are the same, because God is God, and we cannot say one part form of God is less than the other. God is God, and jiva is jiva, and shiva is shiva. The distinct tattvas. So there's only one God tattva, Ishvara tattva. So by siddhanta, they are the same. But then he says, by rasa, Krishna is different. He is distinguished by rasa. So then Vishnu says it is because of Ras Lila. This is the ultimate in the difference in rasa. Of course, Krishna has all the rasas completely, 12 rasas, whereas the other forms don't. But the ultimate expression of all rasas is the Ras Lila. And this is the ultimate pastime of Krishna. So this nobody else does except Krishna. And therefore it's considered most remarkable. So that's the Ras Lila. So this continued for 1 year like this. So we can say, well, then the husbands must have noticed that they would run out every night like this and they would oppose. But then it's explained that actually they stayed at home in one form, which is a Maya form, Yoga Maya form, and the other form, the real form, went out and enjoyed with Krishna in the Ras Lila. And then they would come home in the just before the dawn. And then the two forms emerge back together again. So the husbands never considered that their wives left, the gopis had left them. And also they had no sexual relation after that point. They were just indifferent. They became, by the potency of Yoga Maya, they became indifferent to sex life and whatever. They never touched their wives at all. So in this way, those gopis remained pure and were not touched by the husbands. And they could enjoy, and the husbands never interfered because they didn't even know they went out. Because the other form of Yoga Maya form was sitting in the house. So in this way they were freely able to go out with Krishna every night of the year for them, one whole year, and they enjoyed this Ras Lila with Krishna. So that was all by the arrangement of Krishna and his potencies. Then finally Akura came and he took Krishna and Balaram away, and then the gopis, then not only a little separation, like in the one a few hours, they anticipated that, Krishna, we don't want to separate over 1 day or 2 days or 3 days even, so that they became very, very upset and they didn't want to let Akura take Krishna, and of course they cursed him also. Anyway, Akura took Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna told the gopis, I will come back. He promised that to them. Then they were satisfied. Yes, he says he'll come back, so he'll come back. So then he went, and then of course he killed Kamsa and this, and then his mother and father, Devaki and Vasudev, honored him to stay there. And after a few days, after he had killed Kamsa, then he sent Nanda Maharaj home and he said, I will come back in 2 days. So at this point, there arises a little problem, because we don't think, it doesn't say that Krishna came back. But if he didn't come back, then he must have lied. Because he promised the gopis, I'll come back, and he told Nanda Maharaj, I'm coming back. And if he didn't come back, then he's a big cheater. How can he do this to the most exalted inhabitants, or the most exalted devotees in existence, to all the Vrajavasis and the gopis? How can he make a false promise and keep them in pain for so long. It's not possible. Yet, there's several factors here. One is that because he had also promised Devaki and Vasudev when he had left that I will come back also to you. So then he had to fulfill that promise. And when they saw him, then they didn't want to let him go because they also had Vasali vows in Aishwarya for Krishna. So then they saw him, then Devaki milk flowed from her breast, you know, and she put Krishna on her lap also. So she didn't want to let go of Krishna either. So he had to fulfill that also. Then he also had to fulfill the role of relieving the burden of the earth, because that's why he came. The Devadas had promised, asked him, you have to relieve the burden of the earth, and then I will come. So there were many demons left, like Jarasandha and so many others. Kamsa was killed, but still so many other demons were there. So he had to kill those demons, and they weren't in Raja, they were outside Raja. So he had to go for that also. Yet, he still had to fulfill the desires of the inhabitants of Raja because he had promised them, and of course they were the ultimate devotees, so it would be very, very, very painful for them if he never came back. So therefore he was put in this rather strange position. He had to fulfill Dharma, he had to kill the demons, he had to associate with the Yadus because they were also his relatives, he had to satisfy Devaki and Vasudev. And at the same time, he had to satisfy the inhabitants of Raja, and he promised them also. And he had to protect everybody. So, then what did he do? So, of course, superficially, he stayed in Mathura, and then he went to Dwarka, and then finally he went to Kurukshetra, and there the Rajavasis met him. And then again, they returned back to Raja, and he stayed, then he went back to Dwarka again. So it looks as if he didn't fulfill his promise at all, even after so long, even he said, I'm coming in 2 days. He didn't do that even. And then it went on for years and years and years. And even then he didn't do it. But that cannot be. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, actually, by the potency of Krishna, he satisfied everybody. So in one form, he stayed in Mathura and he satisfied everybody there. In another form, he went back after the 2 days as promised, after staying for 2 days. He sent Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men back. Then 2 days later, he also went back in another form to the people of Raja. But this is a little difficult to understand because generally we see that the gopis were in separation from Krishna later also. So he says there were two forms of the inhabitants of Raja. One in separation, and they were thinking Krishna is in Mathura. And then another expanded form was there, and Krishna came back. And eternally they were enjoying with Krishna again. And he never separated from them. So there are two forms of Krishna, and two forms of all the inhabitants of Raja. One in separation, and one in union. Yeah. In order, but otherwise we have to say that he didn't keep his promise. But he must have kept his promise because they are the greatest devotees. He cannot do that. Oh, that's the story in the when Uddhava goes back. He says, "You meditate on me." But the idea there is that the gopis didn't like that at all, and it's like there's two interpretations of all those words that Vishnath gives. Yeah. Well, actually is there all the time. He never leaves Vrindavan. Yeah? So even if going, we can say, is a little bit of a yoga maya thing. And why he did that is because he wanted to show Uddhava that these are the highest devotees. And Uddhava came back and then he saw that separation. Then he returned to Mathura and he reported, yes, these are the highest devotees. They are greater than Lakshmi. They're greater than anybody else. Yeah? So that's why he had the separation form. But at the same time, he also never leaves Vrindavan since. So he promised Nanda Maharaj, I'll come back in 2 days. So another form came back. So he's simultaneously there and not there. So Vishwanath explains that therefore there were two forms of the inhabitants of Raja, one in separation and one in union. And he says that when Uddhava went back, at first he describes how wonderful it was there. Everyone was peaceful. So that is the one form where they're all united with Krishna. Everyone was happy when he first arrived in Raja. There's a whole description there of how beautiful it was when he came into the cowherd village, and you know, everyone was singing, and you know, they're all peaceful and everything. So they're in separation from Krishna. It's the opposite. They're all dying. The houses are all filled with spider webs. Nobody's cooking. So there was two descriptions there, one of separation and one of union. So two are kind of mixed up a little bit. So anyway, he says there were two forms like this. And those things went on and on and on and on like that. And then in Kurukshetra, the separation forms came to meet Krishna there. And there again, Devaki and Rohini and the others, when they saw the love of Yasoda and Nanda for Krishna and Balaram, then they understood that our love is nothing compared to theirs. Because Mother Yasoda was so overcome, she could not listen to anybody. And then Devaki and Rohini were saying, "Well, actually, you see, this boy is not your son. It was Devaki's son, actually." And they're trying to tell her all this, hint all this, you know, that actually he was born to Devaki. And then Vasudeva took the child over the Jamuna and put him in the cradle. "It's not your child, actually." But Yasoda didn't hear any of that, and she was just crying and trying to feed Krishna like that. So then they understood, well, how has she so much attraction for Krishna more than we do when we're her, I'm her actual mother? Okay? So in other words, the real mother was Yasoda, actually. She was the ultimate mother of Krishna. So they realized that was that. But then, finally, they had to go. They had to leave again after the eclipse was over. They stayed longer than anybody else. All the other people disappeared, and only the Vajravasis were left, and then they couldn't separate from Krishna. So they stayed there for 3 months more, and then every day they would say, "Well, I'll go tomorrow," but then they would cancel. They keep prolonging like this, you know, because they couldn't separate from Krishna. Because they're still seeing Krishna in that form. But then Krishna, they would say, "Okay, you come to Dwarka," but they couldn't do that also. They didn't want to go there. So then finally it describes in the Bhagavatam that then finally Vasudeva and the Yadus, they gave gifts to Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men, and they were very satisfied, and they left. But then Vishnu Chakravarti says, how could they be satisfied just with gifts of silk and gold? That sounds impossible. And so then he says, no, it's not that. Krishna spoke to them. Krishna went with Balaram and Uddhava, and he spoke to Nanda Maharaj, and he satisfied them. What do you say? If I cannot go now because I cannot leave these people here, I have to go back to Dwarka, but I will come back again, and I will stay with you forever. So after I killed Dantavakra, Mathura Gate, then I will come across the river, and I will come and meet you again. So then they were satisfied. At least he's coming back. A little separation, but he will come back after killing Dantavakra. So then they went. They were satisfied with that. So it's described, of course, the events are a little bit out of order. The Goswami has explained that the events are a little bit out of order, the way they're explained in Bhagavatam, so they put the proper chronology. And so finally, he did kill Dantavakra, but it's not described in detail what happened there. But it is described in Padma Purana. So he killed Dantavakra at the southern gate of Mathura. It's called Datiha, I think it's a village called Datiha, which is a corruption of Dantavakra Ha, one who kills, the killing of Dantavakra, Datiha. The village is still named that, apparently, when Vishwan Chakravarti was there. So anyway, he says that's the corruption of Dantavakra Ha. So he killed the demon, and then he crossed the Jamuna, and then he bathed in the Jamuna because he had to purify himself from killing the demon. And then he entered into Raja, and he associated with the gopis and the gopas and everyone in Raja for about 3 months or so. Then he left, and he came back to Mathura, to Dwarka. But it says there, actually, that when he left, he took them all to Goloka. Then he went from Raja to Mathura to Dwarka. So Vishwanath explains that actually this is because they're actually eternally in Raja. It's not that they will disappear from there. So one appearance, that is the from the devas, they could see this, that Krishna was taking one form of these inhabitants back to Aishwarya Goloka. And the real ones remained invisible there and eternally in Raja. And of course, this was then we can say that the separation forms are no longer there. Those ones disappeared, and only the union forms were there. And the Amsa forms worshipped, they were worshipping Krishna in Aishwarya and Goloka, Aishwarya Goloka. And then he went back to Dwarka. So therefore, he did come back, and he did fulfill his promise to the gopis in several ways. One, he never left because he went back from Mathura again. The other, in expanded form, one stayed there, and one, the real forms were there eternally. And then after Kurukshetra, then he did go back again, and then he took them to the spiritual world at that time also, one form, and the other ones became invisible, but they eternally performed their pastimes with Krishna in union. So that's his explanation of that. So therefore, Krishna never broke his promise, and the reason for the separation was to show the highest level of love possible in the gopis to the world and to Uddhava and to others. So many questions. This is the explanation of Vishwanath. There are two separate forms of the Rajavasis, in other words, one in separation and one in union. We don't have transcendental vision. But anyway, it shows the how Krishna is, never breaks his promise to the devotees, actually. And he responds to them. If the gopis give everything to Krishna, Krishna gives everything to them. And he doesn't break his promise. He doesn't actually leave them, actually. But he may do it temporarily, as you said, to show the world that this is the highest level.
You were quoting from the chapter. Does anybody else share the same opinion?
That's his unique interpretation, I believe. In many of the pastimes, Sanatana Goswami has written commentaries, and they are more or less the same. This one I'm not sure of what he takes on that one, but many of them are quite similar. But Vishwanath is quite unique in his interpretation, not only in Bhagavatam, but even in Bhagavad Gita. He is quite unique. Valadev, his Shiksha disciple, actually is quite different. And his whole interpretation of Gita is quite unique also. But it makes sense also. It makes sense. It makes perfect sense from the point of view of, a rasa and Krishna.
It is said that Krishna's voice
was an
extension of
Shri Rupa
Goswami.
Oh, I see. Who came with the goal to reestablish the Vajrasa
at that time.
So definitely did that. Very great insight into the pastimes of Krishna.
When he was
stops breathing and her complexion changes. One of the symptoms of Vabhichari Bhavas is death. It doesn't mean real death, but death-like symptoms. It's almost like they're dying, the symptoms of the person dying, the breathing almost stops, and they're not conscious, and they can't think, and everything. Huh? Then Krishna comes back. This is from the Padma Purana, actually. He quotes from there, and says that he couldn't, how else could the inhabitants of Raja leave Krishna after that? Not possible unless he gave a promise like that. And then Padmapana mentions he did go back after killing Dandavakra. And then it says he also took him to the spiritual world. So Vishnu says, actually, this story, there's no other explanation of how they disappeared, so we'll accept this explanation of their disappearance. That he took one form to Aishwarya Goloka, and the other form remained invisibly performing the pastimes of Krishna in Bhoma Lila.
When Krishna leaves this planet, we're not there, the whole story, the destruction of the reality of the but there is no, any information about how the government.
Yeah, well, this is the explanation. He took them back to Goloka at this time after killing Dandavakra. And so they disappeared in that way. I think there's another explanation also, isn't it? There's some other one as well going to... Is it they committed suicide or something. Yeah. Oh, then she became Rukmini or something? Satyabhama. She became Satyabhama. Yeah. Yeah. Some could be, but this, I think most of these pastimes are particular from this appearance, it looks like it. Well, that, yeah, for some of the pastimes, like in Puran or some other Purana, you'll see a different version, or even the whole Mahabharata is quite different in many respects. So they say kalpa made, it is different kalpa in some cases. Yeah. Now we have to say it's couple day, maybe. Dwarpa Yuga. Well, it's not this form of Krishna. It's an there's a Yuga avatar, but not necessarily this form.
And then also with that other form, also Mahaprabhu comes as well. But instead of being Raja, he's being not Raja, but something else.
Oh, I see. I don't know about that. But only after that's why I'm with Krishna comes. It's an Amsa form.
Yes, yeah. Amsa, but
after Krishna. After Krishna. Fortunate. Oh, somebody said that. Okay, anyway, maybe it's wrong. Concoction. That's mentioned in Chaitanya Mangala, I think. He comes once in a day.
In the Shiva, the Yuga avatar comes. In previous Yugas, the Yuga avatar comes also with the same holy name. Like Guru Chaitanya Mangala. That holy name would never be registered.
And therefore, Krishna, realization of Krishna and Raja is very, very rare. Because he comes once in the day of Brahma, and we can't even understand until Lord Chaitanya comes. Then it becomes possible to access it. There's a story you mentioned about the Mahavishnu killing the Brahmin sons and taking them up, and then finally Krishna and Arjuna go up there, and then it says that they you were my hamsas. You come back to me. So as I mentioned before, that Vishnu says that kala avatirno doesn't mean that. It says that you too have appeared with your kalas, with your amsas, and you bring them back to me now. And then, of course, but he does say that, of course, for external appearances, Krishna also was respectful to this form, to astonish Arjuna, because he was paying his respects in this huge form of Mahavishnu residing on the Karna ocean. So, in one sense, he was deliberately playing the role of inferior to Mahavishnu, but with a certain purpose. So, then Vishnu Chakra describes the thoughts of Arjuna. He said, yes, this is very extraordinary, actually, but Vishnu has said that I've taken all these sons of the Brahmana because I want you to come here and I want to see you. And then he thought, well, this is very strange, because if Mahavishnu is the source of all the universes, he has the power to see anything within the universe. So why does he have to bring Krishna here? He can see everything because everything is within him, and he's in everything, so he can automatically do that. That's very strange. Well, maybe he doesn't have the power, whatever, so therefore he came to Dwarka and stole the sons. But if he went there, then he could see them, because even the betel nut seller and the mala maker are seeing Krishna and Dwarka. So why he couldn't see them? Why Mahavishnu, if he came and stole the sons, why he couldn't see him at that time? Why he has to bring us all the way up to the, Karna ocean to have a vision of us? Huh? So then he thought, that's also very strange. I said, therefore, Krishna must be very, very difficult to see. And he's so difficult to see that he had to actually kill the Brahmins, who were very dear to Krishna, in order to entice them to, do something. So therefore, Krishna is the most rare thing of all, actually. And then he understood that actually Krishna is higher than Vishnu. That actually Vishnu can't even see Krishna on his own, therefore he had to take these extreme measures of taking away the Brahmin sons, etc., in order to get Krishna to do that, go up to the Karna ocean, etc. So in this way he was very, very astonished. And Arjuna. So therefore then he realized that Krishna is more harder to see, because even Vishnu has difficulty seeing. And then he had to go through this whole event of taking all the Brahmins' sons away in order to get Krishna to go up there. So therefore Krishna is demonstrating to me, he's doing this for my benefit, to show his own rareness of getting his association. Yeah. He explains it very, very nicely, the way he says the whole thing. Very, very beautiful. So in this way, Arjuna could appreciate that this was Krishna's mercy for him, and that he was doing this for him. And then he asked Krishna, and Krishna says, no! Why I'm doing this for a different reason, actually. I'm doing this for you. Because you're put in such a position. I don't care about all of this other stuff, whatever, but I'm doing it for you. Because you're my devotee and you got put in trouble, so I'm doing all this for you. So this is what this is displaying. It's displaying that actually, I have great affection for you, I will do anything for you, because you're my devotee. Hare Krishna.